Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and our special guests today are Matt McFarland and Amanda Hahn. They are owners of Keystone CPA in Orange County, voted one of the top 100 CPA firms. We have had the privilege of speaking with them in front of probably at least, four or five audiences. To be honest with you, I've always learned something from them. They have an expertise in real estate. They've been in their own business now for 7 years. And actually, it's a real pleasure to be able to speak with you guys today. You've saved me money. I've learned something every time I've heard you, which is kind of cool. So we welcome you to our show.
Well, thanks for having us, Bruce. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Excited to be here.
All righty. And they're on different phones, but that's okay. They're usually on different mics, so they do that tag team thing so well in front of an audience. You know, one of the things that hits me first is the word strategy. Since we're almost in March, is most of the strategy we're going to be implementing for 2014 as opposed to 2013?
That's a really good question, Bruce. I think on some level, yes. You know, a lot of the significant strategies like entity structuring, of course, that would be something that's only available now in 2014 because we can't retroactively change how we did business, how we invested in real estate for 2013 anymore.
Which kind of lays the groundwork for saying it's not a one-time-a-year event. You actually have to give it some thought prior to... You know, prior to tax time.
Yeah, it's never too early to start doing tax planning. What I always tell people is, you know, the best time to talk to your CPA is before you enter into a transaction, whether that's buying real estate, selling real estate, because before you actually sign on the dotted line, there are other ways to potentially structure things. After the fact, it's much harder to rework what you've already done.
Sure, and how you take income or not, or, you know, if you try to do some tax planning strategies like a 1031 exchange or even set up retirement accounts and all that, you know, most of that has to be thought of before the year end. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yes, a lot of the powerful retirement accounts did have to be set up before the end of the year, but that's one of those special areas where luckily if there are taxpayers out there who haven't done planning, there are still a lot of different types of retirement vehicles that still could be available today that can help us save taxes for 2013. For example, different types of IRAs, such as SEP IRAs or simple IRAs, those are still available, and they could really help someone to save a significant amount of taxes, upwards of $40,000 to $50,000, still could be funded into retirement account today for last year.
And that gets pretty significant. You start doing that and avoiding the taxes, that saves a lot of money up front and starts growing at a much faster clip. Now, is that also true with a 401k or a defined benefit plan?
The powerful impact that those can have is definitely the same. It can actually be even more powerful than maybe just a SEP IRA or a simple IRA. But in terms of timing, those are the kind of accounts that actually you were kind of referring to earlier, Bruce, that do actually need to be set up ahead of time before the end of the year. Now, part of that can still be funded for last year if the account was actually set up. So it kind of just depends on people's situations.
Yes.
If they've got the account set up already, then they can probably still utilize it. But they unfortunately won't be able to now set it up and still try and contribute. But there could be some opportunity there. It just depends on everyone's situation.
You know what's neat about the meetings that we have, and, you know, we have Karen Hall and you guys and ourselves and occasionally some other people that come in, is I think we've all found that we learn from each other. And I mentioned that the last time we had our quarterly meeting, is that it's really important to think of it as a team event, that you really need to orchestrate a team that have different expertises to get the complete result that you want, because it's not one size fits all. And anybody that thinks they can just still do their own taxes simply because they can fill in the blanks of TurboTax, probably is missing some things that are going to be kind of costly.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, TurboTax is kind of a reactive approach, right? Essentially, you're buying a software, and what you're doing is you're entering data and basically just telling the software what has happened last year. What TurboTax, unfortunately, can't do is to be proactive and strategic in helping you plan for the future. And I really love what you said, Bruce, about the collaboration of a team of advisor, because, you know, for Matt and I, we specialize on helping someone identify what strategies can help reduce taxes, with retirement account being one of those strategies. And it's important to for people to understand that we don't just want to put money into retirement to get the deduction, but once it's in the retirement, how do we correctly deploy those funds within the IRS rules? And then also, what are the best ways to invest in an asset, because you don't really just want to put the money and then let it sit in a checking account earning no interest, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just speaking this morning, and right before it was my turn to get introduced, there was somebody up there saying that he had heard that the IRS had hired a bunch more agents to do audits this year. So I thought, well, I've got to ask that. Is that true?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Matt.
We actually have heard that. It's kind of weird. It's you hear almost conflicting information too, because you hear on the same, you know, one spectrum, it's they're hiring more people, but on the other spectrum, they're cutting back as well. So it's kind of like, you know, who's got the right information? I think it's, to be honest, I think it's a mix of things. I think maybe they're hiring more people to do audits, but they're cutting back in other things. Like recently, they're cutting back on some electronic services that people could access online, which, you know, is unfortunate, because, you know, it seemed like the way you'd want to go is more electronic and less people dependent. But so I think it's a mix of things. But I have heard that audits are probably going to go up on the rise. They're, you know, obviously they always want to focus on certain areas that that they feel are, you know, I don't know, lack of a better term, being abused or not, you know, done correctly. So, that's always out there. Yeah,
there's always rumors about, you know, how well you put your, you know, you get have better odds if you do this. And one of them is if you file an extension for whatever reason, you're at a lower risk of an audit. Is that true or false?
That's actually not true, and we've heard that quite a bit too. And I actually asked one of our colleagues who used to work with us at the Big Four, and she's now with the IRS. So we took her out to dinner and kind of tried to pick her brain. They're very secretive about stuff like that. But essentially, what we found out was, you know, on their end, you know, you figure someone who works with the IRS, they still have to work all year long, and they don't really have a quota per se that says, hey, you must finish, you know, X number of audits between January and April, or April through June. So for them, the workload is essentially the same. You know, from a tax law perspective, the audit period, the open period you have is 3 years from the date your return is actually filed. That's the time frame when you could be audited. So if you filed in April, that just means 3 years from this April is when you could be audited. If you extended and you filed in October or September, that just means you haven't, you know, 3 years from that date until you get audited. So I think there's really no truth to that comment about extensions being a safer bet.
Do you increase your odds of an audit if you still do the taxes yourself, you know, where you bring out your pen and you fill out the blanks in pen and send it? Do they look at that harder, or doesn't matter?
I think actually if you were filling out your tax return by pen, they might actually just send it back to you and tell you to do it electronically nowadays.
What are the odds of being audited, period?
Oh, my God.
You know, I don't know the exact percentage, but it is actually, it's actually really low. I mean, they come out with these every couple of years. They show stats from 3 or 4 years ago. I don't have that information in front of me, but it's less than 5% is my gut reaction, just based on what I recall.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And the truth behind it is it really does depend on what you have going on. I mean, you know, the likelihood of somebody with a W-2 and a primary residence, you know, being audited is probably obviously very slim compared to somebody who's got, you know, five businesses. I'm just throwing out scenarios, but.
And I think the profile of each taxpayer also changes the risk, the risk level. So, for example, if you have a business with, you know, average income, to expense ratio, the audit risk would be less, versus if you have a company with zero income and $50,000 of expenses,
mm-hmm.
that entity would be subject to higher audit risk, of course.
I don't know how to ask this question a better way. Does crime pay? And I don't mean let's suggest you do stuff, but I know people when, you know, they tell me what they do, and I just shake my head and go, and you have never been caught? That's ridiculous. And they go, no. And they just think it's perfectly fine. And I just go, I can't even, if I don't even cross a T, somebody calls me up from the IRS. And I guess in a way, you're saying that they kind of target maybe the most profitable group to pursue. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, the IRS does, before we started Keystone CPA, I used to work at a big international company. And so not a lot of people know this, but large international companies are actually on what's called automatic audits, which means that the IRS kindly requests that you sign a waiver to allow them to audit you every single year. And we always kindly agree, because if you don't, then they're going to make your life not very comfortable.
Right. They'll just live in your office, basically.
Essentially, yes. So it's kind of an unspoken understanding with most large multinational companies that they are just always, you know, every year the numbers are audited. But like Matt said, you know, smaller business owners or someone with a very simple return, the likelihood of that being audited is small, because revenue-wise, it's not as lucrative for the IRS to look at that. Does crime pay? I don't know. I think it really depends on the person. You know, we have clients who are very conservative and they want to do everything correctly. They want to make sure they're able to sleep at night. And then we have other clients who really want to, you know, push the limit and get into the gray zone of what's right and what's wrong. So
right.
I think that's up to each person's comfort level.
Well, We have, you know, some people in our circle who haven't filed a tax return in 8 years or something, and you just, no, they never hear from anybody, and you kind of go, are you off the a grid or what?
Well, it's funny you say that, is that we had a client who, you know, we've been working on their business return, and they actually recently got to that same situation, got contacted by the IRS that 2006 and 2007 year.
Wow.
Because they didn't file a return and they had enough, I think what we're being told was day trading, so they had a lot of stock sales in those years, and so finally the IRS finally kind of quote-unquote caught up, if you will, saying, hey, wait a second. So I think it's only a matter of time, to be honest, with the
sure.
people who don't file. It, you know, if they got 1099s or W-2s that are sent to the IRS, they're going to get a letter at some point in the future, you know, so it's just a matter of, you know, do you want to take care of it now or later?
So that 3 years didn't apply to a tax return that wasn't filed.
Exactly. Yeah, the clock never starts ticking if you haven't filed a return. So
okay, what are the penalties that start to occur first for federal and then for California? As far as okay, I didn't file in 2010, and it turns out I owed $1,000. For both, just give me a progression. Is the state nastier on the penalties and interest?
No, generally the IRS has a higher percentage-wise. The IRS has a couple different penalties. There's one for failure to file. There's one for failure to pay on time. One of those can maxes out at about 25%. The other one is kind of like 0.5% every month, and it sort of caps out too, but one of them starts at 5 and goes up from there. So you know, if it's been a couple of years and you didn't file, didn't pay when you were requested to, you know, you can be looking at penalties of 20, 30, 35%. The state's probably 3 or 4% on top of the IRS.
Okay, so
just to kind of paint a picture. So
both of them are, yeah, pretty heavy to intentionally.
And, you know, and obviously, right, what I was going to say is they're obviously adding interest on top of it, too. Now, the interest rate's only, you know, 1, 2%. It's not a lot, but, you know, it's accruing every month, you know, just like
yeah.
real estate interest does, right?
And that varies too, right? That's a variable loan, if you will. So if you have interest rates
go up,
it can get bad.
Yeah, it's compounding.
Okay. What are some of the changes that have occurred in 2013 that we're going to be experiencing as we get our taxes done? What happened to federal tax rates and then California tax rates?
Yeah, it's a great question, and because a lot of people aren't necessarily aware of it, because I don't think it got a lot of press. You know, we kind of joke when we do our when we speak together that the you know, the IRS or the Congress passed the American Taxpayer Relief Act at the very end of 2012, and yet it discussed how rates are going to go up and stuff. So I'm not sure where the relief is necessarily, but you know, the highest federal rate went up by 4.6%, so now it's at the 39.6.
And that's it.
Capital gains rates. Go ahead, sorry.
At what point of income for an individual?
Yeah, so that's for a single person, that's at 400. For a married couple, that's at 450. That's when it kicks in. So it's a graduated rate getting up there, but once you hit that mark,
yeah.
You know, and you can see there just by that one fact alone that it hits a single person at 400 and married at 450. That's a huge marriage penalty, you know. Where they talk about, they don't really quote unquote have a marriage penalty, but obviously they do.
Yeah, that is a big one. And what about the California state tax before we get to capital gains?
Yeah, so California state tax rate actually went up back in 2012. They jumped their highest rate from 9.3 to 12.3.
Well, interestingly enough, when did they do that? They did it in 2013.
That was actually, yeah, so well, that was actually, was it, Amanda, was it late 12 or late 13 they did it? I can't remember.
In late 2012, they made that change, but it was
retroactive.
It was retroactive, the beginning of 2012.
Exactly.
And that shocked a lot of people.
Yeah. I don't think we knew that they could do that. Really? So we've been late? Now you're going to penalize us too?
Yeah. And you know, you asked earlier about the penalties and how California compares to federal.
Yes.
In terms of penalties and interest. I think that the general thing I would tell you is that whenever there's laws about California versus federal taxes, California is always harsher. So it's either less deductions or higher tax rates.
Okay.
So they don't really follow federal on a lot of the credits. They don't follow federal on a lot of the exemptions. And that a lot of times shocks people. The real estate professional, for example, you know, we're real estate investors. If you're deemed to be active in rental real estate, you get to use all of your losses without limitation to offset your income. Well, what shocks a lot of people is that California does not recognize real estate professionals. So no matter how much time you spend in real estate, that's always going to be passive loss to you, and there's limits on how much you can use every single year.
And that kind of drives you crazy because those things have legs, right? So the next year when you have a federal tax return, it's going to maybe have taken into account all of the losses on that form, and then you're saying that California is going to have to use up those losses gradually over the next few years.
Exactly. And so when someone, you know, when someone sells a rental property, for example, the gain for federal might be large because you took a bunch of the write-offs and depreciation. But California, the gain might be much smaller because California never really allowed you to take any of those deductions anyways. So, yeah, on the tax, I mean, tax is so complicated now. You know, for every property, for example, there's federal depreciation, and then there's federal AMT, where we have to use to calculate alternative minimum tax, and then there's California depreciation, and then there's California AMT. So just on one asset alone, there's, you know, four different things to be tracking every single year.
What did they do to the capital gains tax?
They made that the top rate for capital gains tax go up by 5%. So it used to be 15%. Now the top rate is 20%. Now that only kicks in for the same income level. So single, 400, married, 450. So if your income is below that, your long term capital gains rate is still 15%.
I didn't know
but
that.
But again, you know, if you got a couple, you know, big sales in the year, and you know that pushes you over that, then all, you know, the excess over that 400 or 450, you're going to be paying an extra 5% on now.
Okay, and they dreamed up another category called unearned income, which is what?
Yeah, so they have actually, as part of this quote unquote relief act, they came out with a couple as part of buried in there, and you know, actually it's a couple years older than that too, but they came out with a couple of new taxes. There's one that's taxed on unearned income. So now they're taxing you on, you know, interest, dividends, for all those real estate investors, any net rental profits we make on our rental properties, capital gains on our rental properties. So they're taxing you an extra extra 3.8% on that income as well. So this is on top of income taxes. This is on top of, you know, state taxes. So that's, you know, that can kick in too, and I don't think a lot of people are aware of that one, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. And
no.
And what's interesting about the unearned contributions tax is the threshold. It kicks in for single people with income of over 200 and married for people over 250. So now that, you know, a larger population will be hit by this unearned income tax.
So that kicks in before the top rate kicks in.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, if you didn't think taxes are complicated enough, they've got different ranges for everything, you know.
Wow. So I'm just looking at this. I just want to make sure. Top state tax in California is how much?
It's the statutory rate is 12.3, but then if you happen to make over $1 million, you get to pay an extra 1%. So effectively, it's 13.3%
California. On anything over $1 million, right?
Yeah, on anything over $1 million, yeah.
That's not retroactive yet to the first dollar. It's always a scale.
No, okay. They haven't done that, thank God. They have not implemented the flat tax of 13%.
Let's not give them any ideas.
No. Yeah. Okay, so I'm fairly good at math here. So, I mean, if I make a fair amount of money, I am now approaching 55% tax, mm-hmm. depending on how I do it.
Easily. Yeah. Yeah, easily.
So, okay, well, how much can I set aside that's avoid tax then? Let's talk a little bit about that. And how do I, what's the vehicle? We only have 3 minutes in this segment, but let's just touch on some of the vehicles that you can use and the amount you can contribute.
Okay. Well, I think the largest one, I think that's maybe the most meaningful this time of year is to really talk about retirement contributions. Because like I said, that still could be available, for people to fund retroactively. One of the most popular ones is the SEP IRA contribution. So depending on the earned income of taxpayer and or their spouse, it's possible to put away, close to $100,000 still, and take a write off for that contribution. So, if you're someone in the 40 or 50% tax bracket, that could mean $40,000 or $50,000 in terms of tax savings. That still could be possible before the deadline.
Okay. And the deadline is?
The deadline is actually by the time you file your tax return. So that's the cool thing about it is you can still set up the SEP IRA like April 14th, file your return April 15th, and still contribute to it. So it's a really nice benefit / loophole that the IRS provides to people to take advantage of.
Can you file an extension to get to the other date?
Yeah, that's a great thing too. Is you can file an extension for your business or your personal till September or October, and then as long as you set it up and fund it before then, and and it makes sense in your situation, you can absolutely take advantage of that all the way up until. So maybe you don't have the cash right now to contribute to it, but you will in September. Maybe your business is, your cash flow is seasonal or something. So that's something to plan for accordingly with your advisor. And again, going back to what you said earlier, this is not something that TurboTax is going to tell you, obviously.
No, and when you end up with that money being set aside, that's not taxable state or federal until you decide to withdraw it. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like any 401k, a traditional IRA. You pay tax when you pull it out. So
yeah, and I think in addition to just the current tax savings, what I love about retirement accounts is that it gets to grow tax deferred. Especially for our clients who are in high tax bracket, if they're in the 30, 40, or 50% bracket, it's really helpful if you can get a bucket of money to be growing tax deferred every single year, because then now all 100% of that money is growing for you at a much faster rate if you don't have to set aside some of that for taxes each and every year.
Right. Not only do you have the running start of you didn't pay half of it in tax to start with, now you don't have to pay tax as you go. So, yeah, that's been a great invention for people to gain some wealth. We're out of time for this segment. Please contact them at 877-975-0975 if you're interested, and go to KeystoneCPA.com for their website.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.